You're listening to Beyond the Jargon, a jargon-free look at graduate students and their research journey here at UVic.
All right, thank you for listening to Beyond the Jargon. I'm your host today, Liz MacArthur, and joining me in the studio is David Foley, who's doing his master's in music composition here at UVic. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I'm really excited about this because I took music lessons all my life and stuff. So for me, talking to someone who's actually composing music is really an interesting topic. And and I kind of want to know how you wound up here. I assume that you are a musician, and then what brought you to composition specifically?
When I was applying to my undergrad, I played classical guitar. Mm-hmm. So that was the instrument I learned on. And when I applied to do my undergrad in music, I'd been fiddling around with writing my own stuff on, which always happens whenever you learn an instrument, you end up wanting to do your own thing on it. And when you do your undergrad, there's a couple of specializations you can do, like performance or focus on music history or music education. And composition just appealed to me for some reason, and I thought, why don't I just go with that and see what happens? And I really enjoyed it, and I really took to it. So when I reached the end of my undergrad, I wanted to keep going with that. And that's sort of how I ended up in my master's doing it. Yeah.
Did you just go straight through then after your undergrad, straight into your master's program?
Yeah, I didn't take a break, no.
Mm-hmm. And are you composing specifically for your instrument then, or you're composing for all kinds of instruments?
No, I actually rarely write for guitar. One of the funny things I found for a long time actually was writing for my instrument was difficult because I knew it so well, and I knew other pieces for that instrument, that every time I picked up the guitar and tried to play something, I'd be like, oh, that sounds like something else, you know? And I just knew other music for the instrument too well. Mm. And one of the things that sort of is the point of a composition degree is to teach you how to be able to write for any instrument, so that you're given an instrument, you're given, you know, it can play. This is the lowest note it can play. This is the highest note it can play. It sounds good when it plays the, you know, within this range. And that's a lot of what I've learned through the composition degree, especially in the master's, is really refining that technique, being able to just write for any instrument I'm given.
Hmm. Do you have to write in different styles as well, or is it all about discovering your own style?
Yeah, it's a lot more about finding your own style. A lot of the time what the teachers will do, because I have composition lessons, so I'll sit down with one of the composers here. So my teacher now is Christopher Butterfield, and I'll sit down with him, and I'll show him what I've done, what I'm working on, and he'll sort of guide me. He'll point out, say, technical things that I've written down, like this instrument can't play that, or it won't sound that good here, why don't you try this? But they're very, in general, teachers are very hands-off in terms of your style, just because it's sort of your choice, how you choose to express it. The only thing they're really hands-on about is technique. So, as I said before, learning how to write for a bunch of other instruments. And it's good that way because it gives you, you know, enough space to find your own voice, which is really important in this, because there's just so many composers out there. I guess people who aren't terribly familiar with modern classical music would know that, but it's an extremely competitive field. There's a lot of people doing a lot of really interesting things, and the only way you're going to survive is if you can do your own thing and do it as well as you can. Mm-hmm. And that's what the teachers try to bring to the program.
How long is the master's program in music composition?
It's 2 years. Right. So, well, 5 terms.
Okay.
So I guess that's 4 months short of 2 years.
And how far along are you at this point?
I'm in my 4th semester. Next semester is my last semester.
Oh, wow. And what do you have to present? Is there a thesis that you have to write? Do you have to defend? What do you defend?
Yeah. What the thesis is, is a large-scale project, and normally what this is I write a piece that is sort of a more substantial nature, so it's for, you know, 9 or more instruments, and it's generally between 20 and 25 minutes. So there's some leeway there, like, people sort of have their own ideas of what they want to do for a project. Like, my fellow classmate in the same year as me in this master's composition is doing an installation. Her name's Janet Sitt. She's doing an installation piece, which won't have a fixed length. It'll just be sort of set up in a art gallery, and people will walk in, and there will be, you know, speakers set up and that kind of thing. But yeah, what the project generally is you write a large-scale piece that you've done a lot of research into, and that you spend most of these final two terms working on preparing, and then you write a short paper along with it, like 25 or 30 pages about your piece and about how you view it in a historical context.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So what's your piece about?
I've been working on it a lot this term, and it's been a little bit of a difficult term because I got into a lot of writer's block, and the concept of the piece kept changing and refining, and so I don't have the clearest explanation of it right now, but basically it's for 9 instruments, 3 pianos, 3 singers, and 3 percussion players. And the whole idea of the piece has to do with how meaning gets distorted or completely lost in translation. And so the 3 singers are singing in 3 different languages, English, French, and then a compilation of French and English words, just kind of mixed syllables. And they're all singing in those 3 languages at the same time. So it's, and each text, I'm using sort of compiled texts. Each have vaguely, each text has the same general idea behind it, but it's presented differently. It's presented idiomatically in that language.
And so what are the texts that you're using? Are they, were they pre-existing, or have you written them?
Yeah. Like, for example, the English one, I was taking excerpts from the King James Bible and sort of chopping up the verses and rearranging them. And then the French one, what I was doing was going through and then, you know, certain words and phrases that would come up in the English text, I would look up in a French dictionary. And there's a lot of French idiomatic phrases. So what I do is I look up these certain words and find idiomatic phrases that use a word similar to this, and then build a text out of that. And then the French and English one is sort of a composite of those two. But you, again, using not the exact same words, but synonyms of those words.
And so 3 singers will be singing this in the 3 different languages at the same time.
Yeah.
And then with, like, I guess, piano and percussion accompaniment.
Yeah. And a lot of what I've been interested in the past, while I've been in my master's, is sort of this idea of there's 9 instruments playing together, but they're all playing as one sort of instrument. They're all intricately connected in that they all, you know, a sound comes from a percussionist and travels to the piano. They're not, it's not like we hear the percussionist, we hear the piano, you know, and they're very separate elements. They're just, it's almost as if, yeah, they're one big instrument.
Right. So that affects, I guess, the way that you're writing both pieces, or both parts?
Yeah, because the translation kind of jumps. There's translations between the languages that are imperfect. Then there's the translation between the instruments, which is, again, by nature imperfect. You can't replicate the sound of a voice on a piano perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
You can try, but... and also the... Then there's the whole idea of trying to translate, however abstract it becomes, translating the meaning of the text or what arises out of this text into musical language,
mm-hmm.
which is another thing this piece is, I'm dealing a lot with while writing this piece, is how do you have a musical representation of textual meaning? How do you kind of mediate those two? Have one thing represent another, because it's sort of, it's subjective. It depends on who's, you know, when you play a certain piece of music for one person, it's going to mean something completely different than if you play it for another person,
mm-hmm.
you know, entirely based on the context or their history or just what they were feeling at that moment. And so it's, I'm not really aiming to find any big answers or some kind of, you know, way to perfectly translate text into music,
mm-hmm.
but I'm playing around with that and seeing what happens when I at least attempt to do that in some way.
Mm-hmm. Where does this interest come from for you?
Well, with the text, a lot of it is literature. I did my in my undergrad, I did a minor in English, and I've always been really loved reading, like especially fiction, novels especially. I was actually considering doing my undergrad in English before I went to music, and so the I've written a couple of pieces that heavily rely on the text, mm-hmm. that have text as a big part of them.
Mm-hmm.
I've written two sort of, I suppose you could call them mini operas. They're stage works,
mm-hmm.
you know, they like operas, but they each only last, one's 25 minutes and the other one's half an hour. So I have sort of a history of, I came to music with a love of literature and text. So those two things have sort of always been, I've always had those two things. And it's sort of when I wrote those mini operas, that was one of the first times I was really engaging with, you know, creating a text and seeing how I could represent it musically. And it's sort of a relationship that I've always been interested in.
Hmm.
And it makes sense to me now for this, you know, final master's project to be looking at that again after having not done it for a while.
Yeah. And so when it comes time to present it,
yeah.
What is your role when it comes to the performance of it?
My role is to find players. So what, it's actually sort of interesting how it works out, because what I do is I write the piece. I'm going to be finishing it up over the Christmas break, and then starting next term I find people to play it, and all these people will more than likely be volunteers who are students in the School of Music, and these will often be performance majors, people who, you know, practice all the time, who can sort of take on projects as big as these to perform. It's my responsibility to find these players, to make sure they're invested in the project, and to make sure that I get them to rehearse together. I arrange times for them to meet, and I'm there to kind of guide them through the work as they're, mm-hmm. as they're playing. With a piece like this, I will probably have a conductor, because it's a larger group of instruments.
Mm-hmm.
So they will, that conductor would probably take on the responsibilities of you know, the technical aspect of things, make sure everyone's playing together, make sure they're all playing in tune, and et cetera, et cetera. But my role is not, it sort of becomes up to the players at that point when I hand the score to them and it's okay, it's up to you now. And what I was saying before, it's interesting because this kind of reflects what professional composers end up having to do in the real world, is either when you write a piece, you're either writing it for a specific group of players and you will still need to do these things like get rehearsals together, go to them, guide them through the piece, make sure everything's going smoothly, or you will have to get the players together yourself, which is even more difficult when you get outside of school, because then you're you can't just hop over to the music building. You have to phone people up, and then you have to get into, you know, they're very busy with their schedules and you have to pay them, and it gets very, so it's kind of an interesting way. When I tell people, they sort of say, well, wouldn't your professors help you out with that? And in a way it makes more sense for them not to help me out with that, because it's a, they will, you know, if in emergency cases and and things, it's not like they're, but it's good training.
Part of the actual, guess, practical aspect of doing this.
And
I guess the idea is that once you're done, you do want to be doing this.
That's the, that, you know, these are the type of things that you're going to be doing. These are the type of struggles you're going to be facing, and best to be facing those struggles for the first time in a safer environment like the university, rather than, you know, out in the big bad world.
With paychecks and things like that.
And unions and et cetera.
Is it difficult after you've composed the piece? Then I've been interviewing quite a few visual artists lately, and they talk about, you know, they're expressing ideas through painting or sculpture, things like that. But you have an idea and you compose something, but the actual way that it's carried out is through other people. Is it difficult to give it to other people have them express it? How do you deal with that? Like, what if somebody is doing it in a way that you think is totally wrong? Are there boundaries? Can you just step in and say, like, no?
That's one of the, I find there's a lot more parallels between, say, visual arts and composition than most people think. Like, I like that idea of, you know, you're expressing your ideas through a medium, and the medium is music. And, you know, up until the point where you give it to the player, it's the same thing. I'm writing on paper, so my ideas are being expressed through the language of music onto a piece of paper. But I suppose I can say I always have that piece of paper, you know, that's the one kind of, if everything else goes terrible, I always have that one piece of paper, and I can always say, okay, well, maybe someday I'll find someone who can, you know, realize it perfectly. But what happens most of the time is that people who agree to do to perform these pieces are often very they're agreeing for a reason, and the reason is that they're understanding musicians who will have respect for your work and will ask you questions about it. And if you say no, that's not the kind of idea I had here, they won't say no, you're wrong type, you know, they will respect your opinion a lot of the time. If there is some kind of miscommunication, then that's sort of on my end. That's something that I haven't conveyed properly in the score. And so sometimes players will say that. They'll say, well, if you wanted that, you should have said this in the score. So the idea is sort of, if you are clear enough, if you have a good enough presentation of your idea on the paper, then the performance shouldn't be a problem. I guess that's the the easy answer.
Yeah. How much time do you spend playing your instrument? Are you when you're in this program? Are you focused entirely on your studies?
Yeah, I am. I really wish I could play classical guitar again, but I haven't played since at least 6 months. I haven't even touched it.
Wow.
Yeah, because I end up, especially now in the second term, I'm just too invested in the composition, and I'm you work. I don't know, anywhere from 2 to 8 hours a day on composition. And when you're not sitting at the desk actually writing, you're thinking about it. And it's, especially with a piece this big, it's sort of overwhelming. You don't really have time for anything else musical.
Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But I would love to play. And I actually played in someone's piece recently. It was electric guitar. A graduate of here a couple of years ago, a guy named Daniel Brandis, he runs a concert series here in Victoria in James Bay. And I played in one of his concerts, electric guitar, in that.
Mm-hmm.
So I did get to play a little bit of electric guitar, but...
Yeah.
I don't have much time for anything else, mm-hmm. especially with this big project. Yeah.
So once it's done and once you finish your master's, do you have plans already, or are you just focused on finishing?
Yeah, right this minute I'm just focused on finishing, but I do have ideas of what I want to do. I definitely want to at least apply for a PhD program.
Hmm. What does that mean in composition music?
It's the same sort of thing, except on a larger scale.
Hmm.
And so what will happen often, again, PhD programs are difficult because, especially in composition, they can change from university to university, very drastically. But in general, what that means, or what I would be interested in, is you're doing a full thesis as well as a major piece. So your thesis will deal with the piece, but it'll also deal with, another aspect of research that you've been doing throughout your PhD that's sort of almost purely academic, I would say.
Yeah.
That might find some relevance in your final piece, but will be much more fleshed out in a larger form thesis.
Yeah.
I also want to go to Europe at some point, which is Germany has an exceptionally good modern classical music scene, and there's just a lot of opportunities there for new classical musicians to sort of establish themselves or at least cut their teeth there. And so that's definitely those two things are within my near future.
What kind of music do you listen to? Do you listen to the stuff that you, the field that you work in, or do you listen to other stuff as well?
I listen to everything. I know that's a cliche to say, but I do listen to a lot of modern classical music, mostly because it's sort of my job to, as you know, when I finish my master's, I have to do defense, and I have to, be able to talk at some length about the place that my piece holds in relation to, the music of the last 100 years, and be able to point at other examples of, similar pieces, or where I saw relevance or parallels to my own work and other pieces. So that's, I do enjoy it. I don't think I would be here if I didn't enjoy listening to that music. And but I listen to and lots of other things. I've been listening to a lot of electronic artists recently, but I also, listen to the Spice Girls, so.
Have the Spice Girls influenced you in any way?
No, I don't know. probably. There was one piece I wrote, a string quartet, and I took the I can't remember the song. It was some R&B song, like a top 40 R&B song. And I took the rhythm from it.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And I just, it was basically the song verbatim, rhythm-wise. But I had pitches and it sounded, you know, it ended up sounding something like the theme from Psycho, you know.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. But it was really funny because I'm listening to this and everyone's going, whoa, this is really intense. And I'm laughing because all I can hear is this really kitschy R&B song, you know. Yeah.
It must be fun. It must be nice to be able to have fun with your craft sometimes, at least.
Yeah, yeah. That's the great thing about composition, too, is, you know, when you get a good enough audience, and the school of music here is great, you can throw in jokes into your pieces, and, you know, you're pretty much guaranteed someone's going to pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I love to do. Maybe not so obvious as having a, you know, an R&B song, but just something kind of quirky or strange you can throw in there and keep things interesting, you know.
Are the other people in your program also composing the same type of music as you, or are they doing other types
of
music?
Yeah, it's hard to kind of... it's hard to generalize about what's going on in contemporary classical music. I suppose to someone who's not used to hearing this sort of thing, it would all sound the same, or, you know, varying degrees of very strange, you know,
right.
From strange to way very strange. But they are, everyone has very different ideas and very interesting ideas about what they want to do with their pieces, what ideas they're conveying.
Hmm.
I suppose it's the same thing with, you know, modern visual artists. You know, if an undiscerning viewer can go into a gallery and just think it all looks the same, but those people are conveying very specific ideas in very specific ways, and it's just become so nuanced and so almost personal the way people do it that it's hard for someone on the outside to without that historical understanding or, you know, a little footnote at the bottom to. But I think having said that, even so, there's always something if you listen carefully enough and if you look carefully enough, regardless of your education or how familiar you are with it, you will find something unique in there. If that composer or that artist is worth looking at closely, you will always find something unique about them. And I've, especially at the School of Music here, you find that in a lot of the composers.
We sort of touched on that about what people take away from different pieces, like different audiences will take different things away.
Yeah.
Is there any one thing that you want people to take away from listening to your pieces?
Mm-hmm. My composition teacher actually had a great answer to this, and he this is something we think about a lot. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
What will people take away from this? And he said, you know, merely that they will have had an experience. Whether that experience will be negative or positive is sort of up to them. But that, you know, the worst thing for a piece of music is for it to be, you know, given an average rating.
Right.
For someone to, you know, for someone to give it a 5 out of 10. A 5 out of 10 is worse than a 1 out of 10, because a 1 out of 10 means that they had an opinion about it, and it, you know, it triggered something in them. It made them have an experience.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that experience is terrible and they're giving you, you know, 1 star out of 10 or whatever. But I think that's the most, I like that answer, that, you know, you want to give them something to remember, give them something to kind of sit up in their seats. And that's, you know, you can have certain goals for certain pieces about how you know, you might want the audience to hear this or that, but in general, I think that would be my answer too.
Hmm. We are all out of time. I want to thank you, though, for coming in and being my guest today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And if people, is it open to the public if somebody wants to see your final performance?
Yes. If you go on the UVic School of Music website, there's a calendar of events somewhere on there, and they list all the concerts. You should come see as many concerts as you can. Most of the time, I think they're free for UVic students. And we have a large range of ensembles, large range of composers. Yeah, come see them all. My final piece will be performed on March 16th in the School of Music, the Philip T. Young Recital Hall.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Again, thank you for listening to Beyond the Jargon on CFUV.